The descendants of Jacob moved to Egypt because of a severe famine, and in a very short time, they end up being slaves in Egypt. This was prophesied to Abraham because it was his descendants in Genesis 15. Genesis 15 and in verse 13. So God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. And yet God rescued them and returned them to the land promised to Abraham. And when the time came for them to leave, God raised up Moses as the man to deliver his people." In Exodus chapter 3, Exodus chapter 3, starting with verse 9, Exodus 3, starting with verse 9, "Now behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt." Now, Pharaoh resisted God, and that provided God with an opportunity to display his might. Again, in chapter 3, in verse 19, "But I know that the king of Egypt will not permit you to go, except under compulsion. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles, which I shall do in the midst of it, and after that he will let you go." Those plagues then became a judgment not just on Egypt itself, but in that scripture reading that we had from Exodus 12, look again at verse 12, Exodus 12, verse 12. "For I will go through the land of Egypt on that night and will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute my judgments. I am the Lord." God was going to execute judgment to show that he alone was God. Egypt was one of the great powers in that world at that time. Between it and Assyria, it's been around for thousands of years. It was the nation. In a sense, it was kind of like the United States, but the United States hasn't been around that long. It was the world-dominating power. And you would think, from a worldly point of view, well, Egypt's gods must be really strong because Egypt is a strong nation. But God said, "I'm going to show just who is in control." Egypt worshipped over 80 different gods. A historian named Durant said, "For beneath and above everything in Egypt was religion. We find it there in every stand and form, from totemism to theology. We see its influence in literature, in government, in art, in everything except in morality. It is not only varied, it is tropically abundant. Only in Rome and India shall we find so plentiful a pantheon. We cannot understand the Egyptian or man until we study his gods." Egypt's religions, or religion, however you want to divide it, influenced everything about Egypt. It described the whole culture. Another historian named Davis said, "The Egyptians considered sacred the lion, the ox, the ram, the wolf, the dog, the cat, the ibis, the vulture, the falcon, the hippopotamus, the crocodile, the cobra, the dolphin, different varieties of fish, trees, and small animals, including the frog, scarab, locust, and other insects." They basically took everything in nature and declared them to be gods, or at least representatives of the gods. Going back to Durant, he said even Pharaoh was a god, always the son of Amun-Ra, ruling not merely by divine right, but by divine birth, as a deity transcendently tolerating the earth as his home. On his head was the falcon, symbol of Horus and totem of the tribe. From his forehead rose the serpent, symbol of wisdom and life, and communicating magic virtues to the crown. The king was chief priest of the faith and led the great processions and ceremonies that celebrated the festivals of the gods. It was through the assumption of divine lineage and powers that he was able to rule so long with so little force. So we need to understand, Pharaoh saw himself, and the people of Egypt saw Pharaoh as a divine being, as a son of God, and ruling by divine right. So let's take a look at the plagues that God brought upon Egypt and show how he attacked those very gods. The first plague, I did have one other verse I wanted to talk about before we get there. Exodus chapter 18. Exodus chapter 18 and verse 10. So Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord who delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of Pharaoh, who delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they were dealt proudly against the people." It was proven that their gods were not gods. Let's take a look at then the first plague. Water was changed into blood in Exodus chapter 7. Exodus chapter 7 and in verse 20. So Moses and Aaron even went up, even as the Lord had commanded, and he lifted up the staff and struck the water that was in the Nile in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants. And all the water that was in the Nile was turned to blood. The fish that were in the Nile died, and the Nile became fouled, so that the Egyptians could not drink the water from the Nile, and the blood was through all the land of Egypt. Now you'll read some people basically stating that the word blood doesn't necessarily mean blood, but can mean just a blood-red color. Even so, basically they'll say, oh, it was an algae bloom. But however you want to look at it, I don't think it was an algae bloom because it came too fast. Algae blooms don't time themselves with somebody striking water. Nor does it go across the entire land of Egypt all at once. But the waters did change color, and all the fish did die. It was appropriate that the first of the plagues should be directed against the Nile River itself, the very lifeline of Egypt. See, Egypt's a desert area. The only place water is there is basically because of the Nile. And in the center of many of his religious ideas, the Nile was considered sacred by the Egyptians. Many other gods were associated either directly or indirectly with this river and its productivity. For example, the great Khomun was considered the guardian of the Nile sources. Hapi was believed to be the spirit of the Nile, its divine essence. One of the greatest gods revered in Egypt was the god Orisis, who is the god of the underworld. The Egyptians believed the Nile River was his bloodstream. In light of this latter expression, it is appropriate, indeed, that the Lord should turn the Nile to blood. It is not only said that the fish in the river died, but the river stank. and the Egyptians were not able to use the water of the river. Imagine the horror and the frustration of the people of Egypt as they looked upon what was formerly beautiful only to find dead fish lining the shores and an ugly red characterizing it, what had been before provided life and attraction. It's the center of everything in Egypt. And it's interesting, their god of the underworld, that's supposed to be his bloodstream. You can see God's irony. He turned it to blood. None of those gods were able to prevent the destruction of their very realms. The next plague was that of frogs in chapter 8, starting in verse 2. But if you refuse to let him go, behold, I will smite your whole territory with frogs. The Nile will swarm with frogs, which will come upon up and out, go into your house and into your bedrooms and into on your bed and into your houses of your servants and on your people and into your ovens and into your kneading bowls. So frogs came up on you and bring your and your people and all your servants. Now frogs are naturally present along the side of the Nile. What changed was the quantity of frogs that were being found. Now, in various parts of the East, instead of what we call ovens, they would dig a hole in the ground in which they would insert a kind of earthen pot, which having sufficiently heated, they stick their cakes to the inside and then bake and remove them and supply their places with others and so on. To find such places full of frogs, when they came to heat them in order to make their bread, was both disgusting and distressing to the extreme. That was from Clark. You see, the frog was associated with the goddess Hekut, the wife of the creator of the world and goddess of birth. Women would wear amulets in the image of Hekut during childbirth for protection. Consider the irony in the statement that the frogs invaded Pharaoh's bedroom and even jumped on his bed. And by the way, in Egypt, involuntary slaughter of a frog was punished by death. That's why they had such a hard time with them. You couldn't kill a frog in Egypt. And they were everywhere. So even the removal of the frogs by Moses distressed the Egyptians, because in chapter 8, and in verse 12, then Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried to the Lord concerning the frogs which he had inflicted upon Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses and the courts and the fields, so they piled them up in heaps, and the land became foul. You're not supposed to kill frogs. Get rid of the frogs. Fine. They're all dead. That was not what the Egyptians wanted. Be the very opposite of what they wanted. They just wanted them gone. The next plague was lice. In chapter 8 and verse 16, then the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth, that it may become gnats through all the land of Egypt. And they did so. And Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast. All the dust of the earth became gnats through that all the land of Egypt. The word that's there is, that my translation here says gnats. Some of your translations say lice. The word that's translated there, it comes from a Hebrew word that means to dig. So it's whatever is this critter. It was a critter that basically burrowed itself into skin. And it came from the earth. Whether it had a god, Geb, who was the god of the earth. Here was a plague that came from one of the gods, supposedly. And it was especially distressful to the priests of Egypt because they were required to shave off all their body hair every day, including eyebrows and eyelashes, and wear a single tunic and bathe twice a day so that no lice, no bugs would be upon them. And here were all these bugs everywhere. Then there were swarms in chapter 8, in verse 21. For if you do not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and on your servants and on your people and into your houses, and the houses of the Egyptians will be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they dwell. But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, where my people are living, so that no swarm of flies will be there, in order that you may know that I, the Lord, am in the midst of the land. I'll put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign will occur. Then the Lord did so, and there came a great swarm of flies to the house of Pharaoh and the house of his servants, and the land was laid waste because of the swarms of flies that were in all the land of Egypt. Now, I need to also be specific. The word flies does not appear in the Hebrew. It just says swarms. It's a swarm of some type of insect. Some actually believe it was a scarab that was commonly called the dung beetle. These beetles have mandibles capable of sawing through wood and could be more destructive than termites. And notice the statement in verse 24, which says that it would be in the houses of Pharaoh and his servants. That would be distressing to have these. Basically say you got termites in all your houses. That would be particularly distressing. And again, that beetle was considered sacred to the Egyptians. The scarab makes small balls of dung that pushes around, and the Egyptians pictured their sun god Ra as a scarab pushing the sun as a ball across the sky. That's where they got it from. But a more popular belief is that we're talking about the dog fly, which was an insect. Kaiser says, this fly multiplies rapidly in tropical and subtropical regions. Hence, the Delta, with its Mediterranean climate, would not be exempt. In the fall, by laying its 600 to 800 eggs in dung or rotting plant debris. When it is full grown, the fly prefers to infest houses and stables. It bites both men and animals, usually in the lower extremities. Thus, it becomes a principal transmitter of skin anthrax, which later plague, which it contracts by crawling over the carcasses of animals that have died of internal anthrax. And if you think about it, what just died? There's frogs everywhere. And what follows is a bunch of flies, which makes kind of sense. And by the way, this was the first plague where God makes a distinction between his people and the Egyptians. This can't be a natural overpopulation of insects, because it appears suddenly at Moses' command. It disappears suddenly. So that's more than a natural occurrence. And whether we're talking about scarabs or we're talking about flies, flies don't make a distinction based on borders or nationalities. Yet somehow they don't cross the border into Goshen. Take a look at Exodus chapter 8, verse 22 again. But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen where my people are living, so that no swarms of flies will be there. Then there's livestock problems. In Exodus chapter 9, starting with verse 2. For if you refuse to let them go and continue to hold them, behold, the hand of the Lord will continue with a very severe pestilence on your livestock, which are in the field, on the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the herds, and on the flocks. But the Lord will make a distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt. so that nothing will die of all that belongs to the sons of Israel. The Lord set a definite time, saying, tomorrow the Lord will do this thing in the land. And so the Lord did this thing on the next day, and all the livestock of Egypt died. But the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one died. Horses and cattle are not only valuable animals, but to the Egyptians, they were also sacred. It was common belief that the disease that was being passed around was anthrax, which would then match with the flies, which picked it up from the dead frogs and transferred it over to all the animals. But again, it would be a miracle because anthrax doesn't time itself to a day to suddenly appear. Herodotus says, all Egyptians used bulls and bull calves for sacrifice. If they pass the test for cleanness, they are forbidden to sacrifice heifers on the ground that they were sacred to Isis. They had to be clean before they could be sacrificed. The god Apis was represented by a bull. A bull was selected to represent the god, supposedly had the power to prophesy. When Apis' bull died, all the land of Egypt mourned for him, as if they had lost Pharaoh himself. The priest would then travel through every pasture in Egypt looking for a replacement, a calf bearing a black coat with distinctive patches. Now imagine the priest's turmoil after this, because their sacred cow would have, bull would have died. He can't find a replacement because they're all dying. Another goddess, Hathor, represented by a cow or a woman with a cow's head. She was the symbol of the mother of Pharaoh. The king of Egypt was referred to as the son of Hathor. And again, the Israelites' cattle were not affected. Plagues don't respect borders. It'd be like saying, hey, you know, COVID only struck in Tennessee, but it didn't hit Kentucky. There's no borders like that. The next plague was boils, chapter 9. And in verse 8, then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves handfuls of soot from the kiln, and let Moses throw it toward the sky in the sight of Pharaoh. And it will become fine dust over all the land of Egypt, and it will become boils, striking out sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. So they took soot from a kiln and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses threw it toward the sky. And it became boils, breaking out with sores on man and beast. The magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the magicians as well as on all the Egyptians. Again, here the typical, if you read most of the writings, they think it probably was skin anthrax. It's a black abscess that develops into little pustules. They're particularly painful and generally affects the knees, the legs, and the soles of people's feet, which would probably explain why Pharaoh's magicians could not stand before Moses. And this was an affront to the Egyptians' gods, Serapis, god of healing, Ahomphet, the god of medicine, Thoth, the god of intelligence and medical learning. Here we have a disease breaking out, and they couldn't stop it. The next plague, in chapter 9, verse 18, behold, about this time tomorrow, I will send a very heavy hail, which has not been seen in Egypt from the day that it was founded until now. Then jumping down to verse 23, Moses stretched out a staff toward the sky, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire rained down on the earth, and the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. And so there was hail, fire flashing continually in the midst of the hail, very severe, such as not been in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail struck all that was in the field through all the land of Egypt, both man and beast. The hail struck every plant of the field and shattered every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the sons of Israel were, there was no hail. Egypt's not a small nation, in territory-wise. And yet there was hail across the whole land, except for just that little delta region up the north called Goshen. The other thing we got to keep in mind, too, is Egypt's a dry land. It normally receives about 2 inches of rain for the entire year. And suddenly you have a hailstorm. Now, here, we get hailstorms once in a while, but not that widespread. The Bible mentions particularly that flax and barley crops were ruined in verses 31 and 32. It says, now the flax and the barley were ruined, for the barley was in the ear and the flax was in the bud. But the wheat and spelt were not ruined, for they ripened late. So that places the events probably in the month of January. And the plague originated in the sky. Well, that's the realm of Nut, the sky goddess. It was an affront to Shu, the god of the wind, Horus, the god of the upper Egypt, and Isis and Seth, who were supposed to protect crops. And those crops weren't protected. Then in chapter 10, we had locusts. Chapter 10, verse 13. So Moses stretched out his staff over the land of Egypt, and the Lord directed an east wind on the land on all that day and all that night. When there was, and when it was morning, the east wind became locust, or brought locust. And the locust came over all the land of Egypt and settled on all the territory of Egypt. There were very numerous. There were never been so many locusts, nor would there be so many again, for they covered the surface of the whole land. So the land was darkened, and they were ate every plant of the land and all the fruit of the trees that the hail had left. There was nothing green left on tree or plant of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. Swarms of locusts can destroy an entire village's food supply. But this is not a swarm over a village. This is a swarm that covered the entire land of Egypt to the point where you can't see the ground. It's darkening everything. And again, the gods of Egypt are silent. Where was Nepri, the god of grain? Imeret, the goddess of childbirth and crops. Thermuthias, the goddess of fertility and harvest. And again, Isis and Seth couldn't protect the crops. In chapter 10, verse 21. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward the sky. There may be darkness over the land of Egypt, even a darkness that may be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward the sky, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days, but all the sons of Israel had light in their dwellings. Here's an insult to Egypt's entire religion and culture. Because, remember, Pharaoh's the son of the sun god, Amoth-Ra. Amoth-Ra was considered the greatest blessing in the land of Egypt. Egypt's a dry country. It's sunny most of the time. And if this god was supposed to be the god of Pharaoh, the father of Pharaoh. The Egyptians had many other gods who were also insulted. Horus, the god of light. Ptah, the creator of the sun, moon, and earth. Atum, the sun god and creator. Tem, the god of sunsets. Shu, the god of sunlight and air. And a whole bunch of others. They had lots of gods for light. Can you imagine a darkness so thick that you just can't see? And everybody just stayed in bed. And it's interesting that the Israelites had light in their homes, which kind of impact means that even if you struck a candle in Egypt, it just didn't give light. Strange, huh? And it can't be an eclipse because it lasted 3 days. Eclipses don't last that long. And then there was the death of the firstborn. In chapter 11, verse 4, Moses said, "Thus says the Lord, about midnight I'm going into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn slave girl who is behind the millstones, all the firstborn of the cattle as well. Moreover, there will be a great cry in all the land of Egypt, such as has never been heard before and such as never shall never be again. But against any of the sons of Israel, a dog will not even bark, whether against a man or a beast, so that you may understand how the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel." Now, in most cultures, especially those days, the firstborn child was a special child. The firstborn represented the future generations. The firstborn was the inheritor of the family estates. And the death of the firstborn would cause both an emotional and even a legal upset. Because now you have trouble deciding who's going to inherit. And this plague particularly is noticeable because it's so selective. Name another disease that only attacks if you're born first. It's the firstborn of the rich and the poor and animals. So it's very specific and it's very general at the same time. It couldn't have been a childhood epidemic. This particular plague struck at the heart of all the gods of Egypt. As we mentioned in chapter 12, verse 12. Again, it says, "I will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both men and beasts, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment." There were Mishkanet, the goddess who presided over the birth of children, along with seven other deities. Mim, the god of procreation. Selkeph, the guardian of life. Renenut, the guardian of Pharaoh and his offspring. They could do nothing because they don't exist. Yet the plagues that God brought on Egypt, yes, we have people to try to explain them away and say they're just natural occurrences, but these are natural occurrences taken to extremes, and some of them are not natural. And there is no other way to explain it but that God did this. And it made an impact. In Psalm 77, we're going to end with that verse. Psalm 77, and verse 11. "I shall remember the deeds of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will meditate on all your work and muse on your deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your strength among the peoples. You have by your power redeemed your people, the sons of Joseph and Jacob. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you, and they were anguished. The depths also trembled. The clouds poured out water. The sky gave forth a sound. Your arrows flashed here and there. The sound of your thunder was in the whirlwind. The lightning lit up the world, and the earth trembled and shook. Your way was in the sea, your paths in the mighty waters. Your footprints may not be known. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron." We should remember the evidence that God has left for us, that He alone is the God. And I hope you'll think about those things. If there's anyone here today who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ and become a child of God in the form of baptism. If there's anyone here who would like the prayers of your brethren on behalf, also let that be known as we come stand and sing the song. Salute.